Good afternoon. My name is Josh, and I'm an addict.
Hey,
welcome, everyone, to Miracles 5 Workshop, LGBTQ. All are welcome. My name is Josh, and I am an addict. Let's open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Can I have someone come up and read why we are here, please?
I'm Brandy, and I'm an addict. Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we found that in drugs. We placed the use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point. Recovery is then possible.
Can we have someone come? Oh, no, we do that at closing. All right. I'm going to make this short and sweet. Your first speaker I have known for many years. I have seen tremendous growth. She really is inspiring in my recovery, and you know, through the years, as we all know, you know, life still shows up, and I've seen this woman persevere, and yeah, it's really cool to be able to do this workshop with her. So I'm gonna let her share her experience, strength, and hope with you. So let's put our hands together and welcome KSCW.
Hello, everyone. I'm Cassie, and I'm an addict. So I am a two-spirited female. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a bisexual woman, and I'm also pansexual. I have mental health issues. I have addiction issues. So I'm just going to start off with I have a predisposition. I was born into a very addicted, alcoholic family. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and I came out here when I was going into eighth grade. I think my first crush on a woman was when I was 4, and it was my babysitter, and I got really jealous when she took care of other kids. So I think I first started not realizing that I was included on the spectrum when I was really young. So I was raised into a big Catholic family. Half my family was big Boston Italian Catholics, and the other half was Irish Christians. So I went to church a lot growing up, and then when we stopped going to church as much, we still did the whole Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving thing. And my family was very strong-willed about keeping it a secret. So it was really hard for me because when I started to see women and when I started to look at people and start to feel like I had that male energy and that female energy, I started to hate myself. So it was really hard to go to church and to hear these things about either conversion therapy or these other things, or that you're sinning and that you need to be forgiven. So that was the first start of my life where I felt like I didn't really fit in. I didn't have like a certain spot. I had that self-hatred started. I had that shame starting. And when I first like started growing up, I was really into sports. Like I said, I was a really addictive and alcoholic family. And I can just remember myself like going to the Boys and Girls Club all the time, playing basketball, playing soccer, doing those kind of things, and just telling myself, I'm never gonna use drugs. And that was the first like promise to myself that I'm not gonna do something. And what I realized throughout my addiction is that every promise to myself at some point got broken. And that was just like this empty void. So when I was looking up like things just kind of share about and kind of looking at stuff, I kind of looked at like the definition of like what is a spectrum, right? And so you take this like light that goes through stuff and you use refraction and you get this rainbow, right? And it's like this spectrum. So these two opposite ends of things, right? So I look at a spectrum too, like I could be on the spectrum for my mental health, I could be on the spectrum for my addiction, and I could be on the spectrum for being gay, right? So it's complete polar opposites. So light, dark, clean, using. Everyone thinks there's nothing in between that, you know? And like, that's what I have to find out, is that this program today gives me integrity to be able to find those parts of that guilt and that shame that I still have deep down from heteronormativity and like all these other things. Like society is telling me that I have to look this way, and work's telling me I gotta look this way, and rehab's telling me I gotta do this or I'm not gonna survive. And my biggest goal was to find a program that worked for me. I found that program in Narcotics Anonymous. Other people might find that somewhere else, and good for them. I don't think Narcotics Anonymous is the only way, but it is the way that I learned to live. A big part of Narcotics Anonymous is our literature. A lot of people just pick up the book, win the book, hand the book, send the book, give it to rehab, give it to jails and institution, but do you read the book? And that's what's important, is that there's so many things in these literatures that have saved my life. And it, like, in the beginning of recovery, I wanted to read it so I could find a loophole. I'm like, if I read the basic text, if I read Living Clean, if I read the guiding principles, if I read these things, then maybe I can find something in there somewhere that will tell me that I'm not a gay struggling addict that needs help and needs support and needs love. So like that love I didn't want to provide for myself. And it was really hard, especially coming in here. I came into the rooms when I was 20 years old. I'm 30 now. So my first rehab was when I was 21, and I still wasn't fully out of the closet when I went to rehab. And my addiction likes to present itself in ways that might not always be drugs. So when I first got to rehab, I was still in that really big self-hatred thing. And then I got put in a house with 22 women. And I'm struggling with sexuality, right? So you take drugs away from me, you're gonna tell me that I can only do certain things at certain times and do all this other stuff, and then you're gonna put me in there with 22 spanking new addicts. Beautiful women, right? So that was my biggest struggle for about 4 or 5 years in recovery, was doing all the things that they're telling you not to do, but maybe they didn't apply to me because they were telling the men to stick with the men and the women to stick with the women, right? So I'm sticking with the women, but I'm sleeping with the women. And I don't think that was their suggestion. So there is a long point in my life where I just tried to fill that void with other things, whether it was switching jobs, switching locations, switching women, whatever I could do to keep the like limelight off of me. And it's not like other people, like I cared what other people think, because most of the time I don't care, but like I really do. But like, I don't give a shit what people think. And then I'm doing these things, and it's affecting me, and it's affecting my recovery, and it's affecting where I'm trying to go in life. And then I keep touching the same hot stove and thinking things are gonna change. And if that's not the same as using drugs, I don't know what is. So I have this disease of addiction, and it presents itself in any part of my life, wherever I allow it to, from having that lack of understanding of a power greater than myself. Do I say God? Do I say church? Do I say anything? It's a higher power. If I were trying to define it and put it into this little box and try and be like, my God only does this, your God only does this, all this other stuff, then it wouldn't be a power greater than myself. So the second I start trying to define the things that are greater than myself, that's when I know that my ego is coming in. And ego is like the first thing that will lead me back out there to do disruptive things, including the use of drugs. In the first part of our guiding principles, it talks about humility, empathy, and love are keys to selfless service. And selfless service frees us from the self-centeredness at the core of our disease. For a long time in early recovery, everything was about me. So I would get a sponsor, I would follow the suggestions, but I would all do that not selflessly. I wanted to please the man. I wanted to please society. I wanted to please Narcotics Anonymous. I wanted to fulfill my commitment for probation. I wanted to get off adult care consultants. I wanted to do all these things for other people, but I never actually wanted to get clean for myself. And the last time that I went to rehab was the first time that I was able to start working on some of my trauma. And that's the stuff that I didn't want to talk about. When I was raised in Massachusetts, and being a female or a male or anyone, you can get abused. Anywhere you're at, abuse happens. But again, I was raised in a family that says, everything's a secret, don't tell anyone your shit, and if you do, you look weak. So I grew up and I was getting abused. I was getting physically abused by my family. There was a lot of fights, there was a lot of screaming. By the age 11, I was sexually abused. By the age 15, I was sexually abused again. By the age 19, I was sexually abused again. At that point, I didn't even know whether to call it rape or sexual abuse because I didn't have anything left in me. So by that point, I didn't even have the power to say no. Or I said no once and they didn't listen, so I just didn't care. And I just let it happen and I just continued to let it happen until they pleased themselves and then it would get over quicker. So that was really hard to deal with all of that and then to try. So that happened. I got clean. I came out all within like 3 years. So I was confused. I still don't know where I'm on the spectrum. I still don't know where I am in recovery most days, you know. But the next thing I do is I wake up, I get honest, I share with other people, and I include them. And that's what this program is about. The most important person in this meeting is a newcomer. For us, it's even more important to reach out to newcomers that are part of the LGBTQIA community. Because those people are us, and there are still things and situations that take place within this fellowship that we might not be treated the same. Very recently, I was in a situation where someone from Narcotics Anonymous had gone back out, and for some reason, they just picked my name because I was the gay member of Narcotics Anonymous, and they decided to just throw all this stuff on Facebook, like this hate crime like stuff, say how shitty of a person I was, personally message my wife and tell them how they could sexually please them better than I could. Just like really rude, ruthless stuff, physically threaten me. And most recently I went to a meeting and that man was in the room because he's back. And my first thing was fear. And like, I'm so afraid, like he's here, like, if he's using and he has a gun, I'm guaranteed the one he's gonna shoot. And like, that's hard in society that we live in today, is to, not only do I have this big target on me that I'm a lesbian member of society, but I also have this target that I'm an addict. And then I also have this target that I was just on a Chapter 51 commitment. So I have to constantly work on my self-hatred for being gay, my self-hatred for being an addict, and my self-hatred for my mental disease. And so when I'm hating myself, it's really easy for me to be afraid and think that everyone else in the room hates me. And so then the next week, I was like, I'm not going to this meeting anymore, even though this is my home group, like I'm there every week. I go there and I'm like, I looked at my wife and I was like, I'm not going to this meeting anymore. Like, I'm scared. I'm scared that this guy is gonna hurt me. And then I prayed about it. I allowed my higher power to come in this situation. And the next week I went to the meeting. And I was able to see the same person and not be afraid, because I was able to allow something greater than myself to give me an opportunity to continue. And these principles is like what forms that for me, because fear is part of my personality. And I learned from this program that we place principles before personalities. Fear is something that I can allow to take over all aspects of my life, and fear has two meanings: fuck everything in relapse, or face everything in rise. And so I can push all these things out, but the only problem with me pushing all these things away and pushing all these people away from me is that I'm never going to heal inside. So I started to dig into the traditions and dig into the steps and open the basic text and read it. And after a while, I wasn't looking for a loophole anymore. I found something within myself that resonated with all this. And I started to find, like, I found a place where I could fit in and to be myself. And, like, it's so simple. And everyone says it's simple, but it's not easy. Like, literally, the 12 steps are written in order. And then you can go into the 12 traditions. And then you go into the living clean. And it's like, okay, these are the steps. Wow, here's all my shit. Here's another person and God that I can share my shit with. And now I can help other people heal their stuff too as well. Sorry for my language. I am really bad at swearing. But, and after a while too, there was like another part where it's like, okay, I've worked the steps. I'm cured, right? But the steps are like an escalator. You just got to keep going around this little escalator and you get to the top and you get to the 12th step and you learn all this stuff about you. And then all of a sudden there's this crack. And there's this dark hole, and then you slide, and you hit the bottom, and you're back at the bottom again. And it's like, wait, the steps are in front of me again. And you just got to keep working them, and you got to keep doing the escalator of the steps. And it's like, people can tell you these suggestions all the day, but eventually it's going to hurt hard enough that something needs to change. And the answer to that is in our literature and in these meetings and with your sponsor and with a higher power. That's why we have the diamond. I did pull out a couple of other things in here. As in our personal recovery, we often feel unique or alone when we struggle, but most of our struggles are shared. Sometimes when I'm sharing, I think that no one in the room is ever going to hear me or understand what I'm talking about, and I'm just going in random circles and I don't even know where I'm at. But then at the end of the meeting, when I think that it was just this cluster of everything that was so wild, someone walks up to me and goes, I needed to hear what you said tonight because I was going to go use, or they were going to go kill themselves, or they were going to go hurt themselves, and you were the person to prevent that. And I think that's how our higher power works in this room, is that we all share a little piece of our story, and at some point, somewhere, someone's going to be able to relate to that, and you could save someone's life. And that's a huge part of the LGBT community and the Narcotics Anonymous community, because we are part of both of those communities. So it's huge to be connected with the people that are just like you, but everyone in this room has one thing important about them, and that is that you are addicted to something within your life. So what can I do? I can get honest. I can get raw. I can go and realize that Narcotics Anonymous is not the only way that I need to heal my problems. When I have some of that trauma and when I have some of that rape, and when I have other things, I went to, the most recent rehab that I went to was Mahala's Hope, and they did equine therapy with horses, and they also did EMDR. And so once I started to do EMDR and work on that trauma and work on those situations, they weren't as violent, and I wasn't as scared of them, and I was able to start healing. And so that was really cool, is that I need to realize that not only do I need to stop using drugs, but I need to remain honest with myself, with my sponsor, with God, and with other people in the fellowship. Or else I'm just going to be lying to myself the whole time. And, like, I'm so good at lying to myself. I'm so good at hiding and telling, like, trying to blend in and be a chameleon and just, like, switching places. But until I'm able to actually get honest and see those things, like, nothing's going to change. And I think, honestly, I think Josh has been a big person who has, like, seen those things, like, for a while, like, it was really hard, like, with the rehabs and just sleeping with a bunch of people and all that other stuff. And then it's all of a sudden you're sitting in a room in, like, a meeting of recovering addicts, and there's three people that sit down, and there's three people in that room that you've slept with. And, like, it's a really shitty feeling. And someone came up to me and was saying, like, there's two people that came up to me about that situation. One was a male predator himself, and he goes, I just want to tell you, from one predator to another. And I just, like, that just hit my heart. And I was just like, wow. And then another one told me that I'm robbing from these women's recovery. And that was, like, a woman that I respected in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And both of those people affected me in a different way. But I feel like both of those people were my higher power showing me, like, something I'm doing is wrong. And people will keep coming to me and telling me the same thing until I'm able to hear it. And so that's how my higher power works, is I'll hear it in a meeting. I'll hear it from someone I don't like. I'll hear it from someone I do like. I'll hear it from my sponsor. And then all of a sudden I'm like, la, 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 la. And then it starts to hurt. And it's like, wow, I'm really not following any of these suggestions. And I'm wondering why my life still sucks. And so like my biggest part is that today I practice that integrity in all areas of my life. I get honest in all areas of my life. I was on my way here this morning, and we stopped at a Caribou, and I work for Caribou Coffee now. And they were busy, and they had like 10 cars outside. And I just looked at my wife, and I was like, I need to go help them clear their screen. And I was like, I just need to go in there and help them so that they're good to go for the rest of the day. And like, that's what this program gives me today. Like, if I was using, I wouldn't be able to go help other people. I wouldn't be able to share a message of experience, strength, and hope. Like, I wouldn't be able to do anything. I wouldn't even leave my house. Like, that's where my addiction takes me, is it wants me to be alone. It wants me to be suffering. It wants me to be struggling. It wants me to say no one else out there is like me. No one knows my story, which is totally untrue. And that's just the voice that my addiction presents itself in my life today. But today I'm able to realize I'm not feeling healthy. I'm not feeling good. What am I doing that is preventing me from feeling good? And that happens when you use things like the IPs, and you find the IP that has all those questions at nighttime, and then all of a sudden it's like, what did I do today that wasn't right? What did I do today that affected others? What did I do today that affected myself? And eventually, after like creating those habitual habits, like you just start to do those things before you go to bed. You don't have to write it down anymore, even though writing it down does help. So I would start with writing it down. But you don't have to continue to write it down, because at the end of the night, you're laying in bed and you're like, how'd today go? Did I do something that hurt somebody? Did I do something that hurt myself? And like, for me, sometimes it doesn't even take hurting myself to stop. It takes hurting the people around me. And when it starts to seep out like that, it's just like, wow, this is affecting other people. When you really start to try and convince yourself that no one cares, I'm not affecting anybody, and then it's like, I'm affecting my work, I'm affecting my job, I'm affecting my love life, I'm affecting everything. And like, it's just really hard to see all that shit in front of you and see this mountain of shit and then try and do that alone. So like, Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life, not only because there's stuff that I can share in meetings, but there's stuff, certain things that I could share right now while I'm speaking to you. There's stuff that I can share in meetings, and there's stuff that I save for my sponsor. And whether that comes to rape, abuse, drug use, having a family member that dies, all of that stuff today, I'm able to share with my higher power and share with another individual. And that's what this connection and program is about. I'm able to do that as an LGBTQ member of the society. I'm able to do that as an addict. I'm able to do that with mental health issues. And that, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. And that's what this program gives us today, is a way to connect with other individuals and provide the footwork that was provided for us. Like I said, these books are written in order so that we can follow them. It might not be easy to see all your shit. It might not be easy to figure out these traditions, but I can tell you what, it's way easier reading this book than it is to read the AA book. And I'm like, I read the AA book. But like, we're derived from that program, you know what I mean? So like, there was a group of addicts that tried to read that AA book and was like, we need to make this simpler. You know? And they did. And so like, I can't say that I read this and I get confused. There might be stuff that I need to talk to someone about. But like, I read this and I'm understanding these principles. I'm understanding this program and I'm applying that in my life today. I got one more little quote for you and then I'm gonna turn it over to Josh. But we find a home in NA and then we find a home inside that home. Within the wide, weird, colorful world of NA, or the NA membership, we find our tribe. And that's what I found today. I found a family that will love me, accept me. They won't ask me to ask for forgiveness for being who I am. They will let me come in, share as I am, share where I'm at, share where I'm going. And that's what this program is about. So I'm so proud to be a member of the LGBTQ community, and I'm so proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I wish you all a 24 and I pass.
Thank you.
So our next speaker, I've also had the pleasure of knowing for about a decade now. We have seen each other through a lot in these rooms. I have seen him go through a lot. But most of all, I've seen him grow and heal as an individual, and I'm so proud to be his friend today. Josh.
Hi, family. I'm Josh, and I'm a grateful addict. Took my shoes off because I wanted to feel more connected with my creator. Because today, my creator is who has given me the ability and the freedom to be who I am today and to be free from the chains of all addiction, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sexuality, sex, you name it. I've dealt with it. And it's because of Narcotics Anonymous that I can stand here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you and how I did that. I just want to read a quick paragraph I came across in one of my readings today, and it's not a Narcotics Anonymous approved literature, but it's going to kind of help me get in and into my story, my truth today. I'm not trying to say that my life is perfect or that my relationship is always smooth. I am saying that my tools I have today are working. I seek love and support from a variety of people, as well as myself. And I am growing into many of my dreams. Success is still difficult to accept, but I am getting better at that too. Through my own work and my God's blessings, I am no longer sabotaging my life or my sexuality, and you can put whatever you want at the end of that. My recovery, my truth. Today, when I'm asked to share my experience, strength, and hope, try to share from a place of love and acceptance. For a long time, I could not accept that I was gay, and I lived in this cruel it's a cruel world, and it was a cruel world. I did not grow up in a religious home, so I had to, on my own, find my own God, my own spirituality, and you know, that messed me up at a very young age, because I got involved in religion instead of spirituality, and I belonged to a religion that preached every Sunday that I was damned to hell and I was no good and no one was going to love me, and that just put messages in my head at a very young age that it wasn't okay to be me. It wasn't okay to feel the way I felt. and that I was never going to be good enough. I was never going to be successful in life. I was never going to have what I seen everybody else around me have that I wanted. And that was someone to love me unconditionally. I wanted a family. I wanted children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, and then I got into high school. And I thought religion could do enough damage. I'm here today to tell you that the emotional abuse from the community I grew up in, from my peers at school, were worse than any sexual abuse I encountered as a child, any physical abuse. So after I finished high school, I was really lost. And I, for a long time, stayed connected to religion, trying to find, you know, where I belonged. My parents were completely absent from my life. At 16, I am on the street trying to figure life out. Grew up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Would have graduated in 1999 from Oshkosh West High School. It was my first week of my senior year. I was at an after-school assembly, and I was to go to a family friend's house where my mom was visiting after this assembly to meet her there, and then we were going to go home. That day forever changed my life. Left the assembly, was walking through the parking lot, and I was gang raped by the entire football team of my high school. I fought like I've never fought for anything in my life. Was able to escape the situation, and a good friend of mine was driving down the road. She had seen me butt-ass naked. I'm screaming for help. She stops. She gets me in her car. She takes me to where my mom is. We get me dressed. We get me together as best as I could put myself back together at that point. We call the authorities. We go back to the school. And that is where that memory lies today. I have never got an apology from the school. I never got an apology from the students. None of them were prosecuted. My mother and father were told to take me out of that school and place me in the other high school across town. And I was not okay with that. I mean, my parents basically just cowered in a corner, and all I wanted at that moment was for my parents to stand up for me and tell me it was going to be okay, and they still loved me, and I never got that. So at 16, I end up on the streets. Oh my God, my life. I will not bore you the details. Very quickly spiraled out of control. I was couch surfing. I was living behind dumpsters. I was living with pimps. I was living with whoever would show me what I thought was love. And that is what I've been searching for since that day. Love, acceptance. So then, through the years and this, that, and the other thing, I get a call out of the blue from my cousin, who is part of the LGBT community, and she had been out for several years by this time. She was an adult, was in a relationship, my family accepted her. There was nothing, like, it wasn't a big deal. Everybody loved her. And she set me up with someone that she went to high school with, and that is where my addiction with drugs began. So by this time, I have developed this need, this yearning for love and acceptance, and basically relationships, sex, drugs, alcohol, shopping, food, it all became my addiction. What I just shared with you are just symptoms and how my addiction manifested. A drug is a drug. It doesn't matter if it's in a pill form or a needle or food or sex. A drug is a drug, in my opinion, today. And that is what this program has taught me. That doesn't need to define me today. My past doesn't need to define me today. The things that were done to me as a member of the LGBT community, the bullying, the hate, that doesn't have to define me today. What defines me is love. And took me a lot of hard knocks in this program. Been in this fellowship and another fellowship. I came in through the other fellowship. I love both of my fellowships. I do. 12-step program is a 12-step program. I don't care where you get your hope from. That's all we're sharing. That's all we care about is sharing that with the next alcoholic, drug addict, whoever that walks in our door, our rooms. It's a message of hope. And I found that here, Narcotics Anonymous. Like I said, I love the other fellowship. I'm very involved in both fellowships. I have done a lot of service work in both fellowships because I feel that I have a message, and I feel that it's my higher power's calling that I share that message, because I feel through all the pain and the growth that I have seen in my own life, in my own recovery in the last 20 years that I've been around, like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. If Cassie W. can do it, anybody can do it. And her and I have gone through some pain. And the cool thing is that Cassie and I have been able to put all the prejudice and all our pain aside, and we've been able to support each other and encourage each other to keep going, no matter how painful it got. No matter who was talking shit behind her back, because it was happening. And just continue to love and share a message. And so I was just sharing this with Cassie outside before our workshop. And a lot of you in this room know me personally, know me from meetings. So for 20 years, I continue to live the same lie. Came to these meetings, came to these conventions, saw involved in service, but I felt like a hypocrite every time I sat in one of these chairs. Today, regardless of my behavior, and let me tell you, I fuck up a lot. I do. My first WISNAC. I don't know if you were there. Were you there? Cassie was there. I was talked about for months after that. Because I thought, and Cassie touched on this when she spoke, I thought if I was going to hurt, you were going to hurt with me. So for a long time, I preyed on newcomers. In my very first WISNAC in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, I thought it was going to be cool. And my sponsor's there. And she had people watching me. I took a newcomer to the boardroom. Talk about having to face reality and face the truth and be humble and just shut your mouth and sit down and listen. Because let me tell you, as soon as my sponsor found out, the whole convention knew. And it wasn't to harm me. It was to keep me honest. Because before this fellowship, I was a liar. I was a manipulator. I became a predator. I became that person that hurt me because I wanted you to feel the pain that I felt. Today, I can do that by sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I don't have to act out. I don't have to cause physical harm to another human being to deal with my pain today. So yeah, I came clean about 2 months ago now. That I have struggled with a sex addiction for 20 years. And this started when I was a little boy, being abused by my father and my brothers and my cousins. Because in my family, there were no boundaries. There was no talk about healthy boundaries and healthy relationships and sexuality. Today, I get to share a message of hope. And I get to break the family cycle. And in the 20 years that I've been around both of these fellowships and have been able to participate in workshops and share my experience, strength, and hope and enjoy these conventions, I see the pain. I get to talk to people about their pain. I get to talk to people that have not even been able to begin to discover who they are, what they are, and do that without harming them. And just showing them for the first time that someone loves them, someone cares, someone is hearing them, someone is listening. And it's great honor, and I'm very grateful. For the first time in my entire life, you know, I can say I'm grateful, and I mean I'm grateful. I was standing outside this morning, and there were a few others out there, and someone had said something about the sun, and I'm like, I'm so grateful God woke me up today, and I could see the sunshine. Like, what a gift. Because there were times, you know, when I couldn't see the light. You know, it's not only about the physical addiction. It's the mental, it's the emotional. And I had to learn how to heal all that, so that I could feel whole inside again. For a long time, I filled that with thinking that, you know, I had to sleep with you, or I had to harm you, or, you know, I had to harm myself. Today I fill that with God, the God of my understanding. And what a beautiful gift. And it has just allowed me to grow as a person, as an individual, in ways that I never thought imaginable for myself. And I have amazing opportunities ahead of me. I've talked about this in several workshops. I've worked in healthcare. I've always been a caretaker. It helps me not look at me. And I just walked into work today, one day, and I said, I cannot do this anymore. God, show me your will. Show me what my purpose is. Show me what you want me to be doing. Because this is not fulfilling me anymore. So I'm back in school, and I got to get my GED, which won't be that hard. I've told myself it would be difficult, but I'm smart. I kept a 4.0 through the 11th grade. I'm not dumb. And then I am going to be working on continuing to heal myself, working on my speaking skills so that I can continue to share a message of love and hope and become a motivational speaker. And my goal and my dream is to eventually become a circuit speaker for the fellowship. And hopefully by 2000, my goal, if I don't meet it, it's okay. It's still going to come. My goal is to contact an editor, and I want to publish my autobiography. And hopefully that will someday be able to help someone else. Because when someone shared their pain with me and their struggles, that's what allowed me the gift of recovery that I have today. Thank you all. My name is Josh Lemonet.
This is a wee program, so at this point we're going to open it up. If anyone wants to come up and share, I encourage you to. The floor is open. Do not fall in.
Thanks, Cassie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
It's beautiful to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Sure. My name's Paul, and I'm an addict. That's your partner. This is a fully new concept to me. I would go as far to tell you about my heterosexuality, about my bisexuality, and about my identity, but those things are largely unknown to me. Never been molested, never been abused. I can, however, tell you that the ignorance of my disease led me to think that it was normal or okay at 16 to be with a woman in her mid-20s. It took a therapist to tell me that, Paul, that's abuse. I do, however, also not... I don't defend myself from the idea that when I'm in the middle of my drug addiction and I go to one of my friends and say, can you show me how to perform oral sex on you? I want to experience that. When I say that to him, what I didn't know what I was doing is I was just showing him how incapable of loving myself I was. Because the state of how I was and whatever I wanted, all I showed you is how I can't be a friend to you and I can't protect you. I don't know how to love you and I don't know how to love myself. And I don't know what I want or need. I think I do, but when I go to find it, all I do is hurt me. See, for me, it became very normal to not encourage and know what was going on inside of me. So now, regardless of what I want to, if I want to identify as being a bisexual man or even a gay man, I can't do that because I have this disease that's stolen most of my choices. I couldn't figure out who I was. So today, I'm taking that time for me. I've let go of my reservations, which unfortunately for me is pretty much everything I do. To just stand here and to be a sponsee, to learn to be a father, and to learn to be my own friend. Because when I have that, when I have those things, I can be anything I want to be. And the day will come where I'll be free from those old ideas and I can find love for myself. And I've already found some of that. I've already found some of that love for myself, and it comes with some real courage and some real honesty and some pain and some loneliness. See, those are my teachers too. I don't deny those things in my life. I embrace them. Those are the things that guide me toward, in part, who I need to be. If I reject those things, if I reject that pain, I'm making it a dead end. When I allow it space in me, It comes back around and it becomes something else. It doesn't stay as just pain. And I'm not alone here in this program. See, I tried to be. I made myself alone because I thought I was protecting myself. The disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It says in our literature, I believe it says that the broad base of our design is meant to embrace every addict, every form and manifestation of addiction. So I was taught to make NA my home, one program, one recovery. Because in that, I'm not searching for the solution to my addiction. I'm not searching for who I am as this, that, or the other thing. I heard said, it was a guy in a speaker meeting. He said something beautiful. It was Adam T. He said that the statue of David was carved when Da Vinci was asked, "How did you carve the statue of David?" He said, "I didn't. I just chipped away everything that wasn't David. And what was left?" That's what recovery does. You put the man back together, the world falls into place. I'm Paul. Grateful to be here. Thank you.